Okay, so welcome back, everybody. Today's week number three. The first week was we called from leaving Egypt, from a redemption to Mount Sinai, or preparation for Mount Sinai. The next week's preparation, the obfuscation, and how from preparing to become God's people, we had a whole discussion how we're going to meet God. We'll do the review in a minute. And today we're going to talk about, let's get the title up real fast, share my screen. Here we go. Class number three. Sorry, it should be class number three, not number two. But the Dibrot commandments or statements. We'll see what we're talking about in a minute. That should be a three there. Don't look about that three. We'll fix that later. Okay. Just a real quick review, and then we'll get to work real fast. By then, everyone should be logged on. Usually takes 5, 10 minutes for everyone to log on. Okay, so we talked about Matan Torah being a gift or an obligation. That was our first big topic. And my main point was the main event that happens is not what we receive, but rather the obligation we take upon ourselves to be God's people. The biggest event, in my opinion, is not chapter 20, but chapter 19, where God makes a proposal in a formal way to the Jewish people. We talked about this. Here's what you tell the Jewish people, Beit Yaakov, Bnei Israel, motivator, look what I did for you. Now, what will you do for me? Will you obey me? Keep my covenant, be my treasure nation, even though I'm the God of all the nations. And then, if you do that, you'll be a priestly kingdom. You'll be a nation separated to represent me. We talk about the idea of Kedusha, where God separates one nation from many, but the purpose of that separation is to bring God to all the nations. We become the funnel to bring godliness, just like anything in Kedusha. Shabbat brings godliness to every day of the week, and the Mikdash brings Kedusha and God to everywhere outside the Mikdash in the land. Because it's a proposition, it has to be ratified. So we talked about its ratification. That was our first week. And the second week, last week, we talked about now that we accepted this proposition, we have to accomplish the goal. So we need a contract, which will be the Dibrot. But before we get to Dibrot, how is God going to communicate those Dibrot? And we talked about how God will speak to his people directly by way of Moshe, plan A and plan B. If I remember correctly, that was last week's discussion. Okay. So we're going to begin this week just to identify some units, and then we're going to get to the Ten Commandments. Just real quick, I'll share with you just a cute little source sheet. It's called Revelation Take Two. You'll see why, you'll understand the title later on. But in chapter 19, the first eight psukim, we talk proposition. Last week, we talked about the preparation from verse 9 to 15, and how Revelation begins on day three with the confusion. Who hears what from, do they hear God directly or not? Next week, we'll talk about limitation. We'll get to that next week. And when we say what happens right before the Dibrot, then we have the first two Dibrot in first person. In chapter 20, the last eight Dibrot in third person, we talked about last week. Then the fear story where they beg Moshe Rabbeinu to go back from hearing directly from God to hearing through Moshe, from what we call plan B to plan A, and the whole discussion when that happened. And finally, legislation, which should be one of the future topics, Parshat Mishpatim. And next week we'll get to what I call jubilation. That's after the whole unit of laws, after the Dibrot, we get the ceremony where we say Naaseh V'Nishma. And we have a kiddush, and we eat, and we drink, and there's a ceremony. We'll get to that later. So what are we going to focus on today? Today we're going to focus on the contract itself. The contract, and later the laws that come after the contract. So just one quick point about where in Chumash, after the Ten Commandments, which we'll try to describe as a contract today, where do we find laws about how to become that nation? I'm mentioning it because it's going to relate to what we just read in Shul yesterday. For those who went to shul, we'll have shuls. There aren't too many places in Chumash where we get a group of detailed laws about day-to-day behavior. We find them in Parshat Mishpatim, which will be our topic next week or the week after, where we have three chapters of laws about day-to-day life. We have them in Kedoshim to You, chapter 19 in Sefer Vayikra, and we have them in the middle section of Sefer Devarim from chapter 12 through 26. Other than that, there's tons of laws about rituals, stories that happened, but there's three main sections of laws. Parshat Mishpatim, Kedoshim to You. Let me show you on the source sheet real fast. The wrong one. Should we attend class? The units that we're going to have Parshat Mishpatim in Sefer Shmot, Vayikra chapter 19, Kedoshim to you, the laws in Sefer Devarim in the middle of the speech. These three units are the main places in Chumash where we find, I guess, 90% of the practical laws of day-to-day life of being Jewish. And these are the only times where we have an arrangement of laws, an assortment of all different laws that relate to all different aspects of day-to-day life. We have specific laws like Shemitah and Parshat Bahar. We have laws about Korbanot, laws about the Mishkan and Mikdash. But laws about day-to-day life, one after the next, these are the three units. Parshat Mishpatim, Kedoshim to you, and Devarim. The reason I'm mentioning it now, because all three of these units, as we'll see, are going to follow the pattern of the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments are going to set a pattern, and every time we have a set of laws, they're going to follow pretty much that pattern. And now we have to explain why that happens. So what we're going to do now, stop the share. We're going to go back to the Ten Commandments, and now we get to use chat a little bit. I guess we're about, okay. I guess everyone's online. Here's my question for everybody about the Ten Commandments. We'll just take a quick little poll. I should have set a poll up, but we'll do a, instead of a poll, we'll just use the chat. I'm going to ask a question. Everyone's heard of the Ten Commandments. They're famous. I don't have to review them, but we're going to go over them soon, but you've heard of them. If someone asked you, if you could ask God, who are they for? Words, we know we got them first. Am Yisrael was the first nation to hear them. But if you would ask God, are these for only the Jewish people? Or are they for all humankind? Again, I know they were given to us first. But if you would ask God, are they universal or particular? Meaning, are they for all humankind or just for us? So just answer universal, particular. Got that? Are they for everybody or just for us? I just want whoever can chat. And don't look at other people's answers. Both is not an acceptable answer. If it's both, then it's everyone.
It's everyone.
Okay, both is everyone.
Okay. Chat. We don't need to hear people's comments.
It's okay. I'll take another. We'll get about 20 or 30, and then that'll be good. Just follow the chat, everyone who can. I could have told you what the answer was going to be beforehand. Particular, I'm Mr. Only. Okay. I think I proved my point. It's about half and half, isn't it? You see it going back and forth? Every time I ask the question, you get both answers. Now, I think that's enough. Okay, we have enough in the chat. I'll just summarize the chat. I didn't count up. I should have set up one of those polls. They can do that. I forgot to set that up because I get confused when I set them up on Zoom. Okay. But particular for everyone, university in particular, it's about 50-50. Now, I don't want to speak Lashon Hara or things like that, but I just had a class on that. I was eavesdropping before, so I have to be careful. But I'm assuming those who said they're just for the Jewish people, I wouldn't say they're more religious, but they're more on the, I call it the more, I guess, Talmudic, more in the Haredi realm. And those who said universal are more in the Torah motion camp. That wasn't nice. Okay. But you understand my joke. Here's my point. Let me explain why. Anyone who knows Gemara knows that a non-Jew can't keep Shabbat. Correct? So if Shabbat is in the Ten Commandments, it can't be for everyone. In fact, the Gemara says that if a non-Jew keeps Shabbat, you give capital punishment. It's like, what's going on? It sounds like, how could that be? Of course, I don't think anyone's ever practiced that. Also, we know there's 10 commandments and we know there's only 7 Noachite laws. So there's no way the 10 commandments can be for everyone because there's only 7 Noachite laws. So either by the Gemara or by doing your math, therefore anyone who knows Talmud says right away they're just for the Jewish people. Now, anyone with common sense knows they have to be universal, and let me show you why. Okay, let me explain what I mean. Let's go back to my screen share. I want to go through them one by one, why they seem to be universal. Let's take them again. Of course, they were given to us. But the first commandment, assuming that it's to believe in God, I might argue with that later on, But if the first commandment is that to believe that God exists, which is the way it's often understood, I think many people, I'll check, you can argue with me later on, but I'm assuming that a lot of people hold that the first commandment is the belief in God. And the second commandment is not to believe in other gods and not to serve them, even though they don't exist. So why would those not be universal? There's no logical reason why God wouldn't want everyone to believe in him. Again, he's the God who took us out of Egypt, but it's not to believe that God took you out of Egypt. It's to believe that he exists. If that's the commandment and not to have other gods, those should be universal. Now, not to say God's name in vain. There's no reason why that wouldn't be universal. Sometimes basketball players have trouble with that one when they miss a foul shot. So sometimes they blame it on God, if you ever listen to people cursing when things go wrong. But in general, there's no reason why God wouldn't want everyone not to say his name in vain. Now, keeping Shabbat, we know the Gemara, that a non-Jew can't keep Shabbat. But logically, what would be so terrible if a non-Jew once a week stops all creativity, stops work, just to think about and reflect on the fact that God created? Why is that something wrong? There's no logic why it shouldn't be universal. Okay, honoring parents should be universal. Not to murder, not to commit adultery, till the 20th century was universal. Not to steal, not to bear false, all these things, and not to covet. There's no logical reason. Let me stop to share for a minute. If you go through them, there doesn't appear to be any logical reason why these would not be for everybody. Agreed, we got them first. Got my point? And therefore, it's when you just go through them one by one and use common sense, it makes sense that God would want everyone to keep them. So how could it be that they're just for us? Now we want to prove that even though the correct answer is they're for everyone, the right answer is they're just for us. Why is that the right answer? No, I'm saying the logical answer, they're for everyone. Because according to Chumash, they're just for us. Because I want to show you now from Sefer Devarim, they're referred to as a covenant between God and his people. Now, I'll ask a question everyone knows the answer to. Who knows two? Remember? In Hebrew. In English, it's a machloket. In English, it's who knows two? Two are the tablets that Moshe broke or brought. There's two ways to sing the song. Is it talking about the first luchot or second luchot? So are the two luchot that Moshe broke or Moshe brought? But seriously, in Hebrew, it's shnei luchot habrit, which means that the luchot, which are written upon them, the 10 statements, or the 10 commandments, as we call them, they're referred to as a brit. They're a covenant. What makes them covenantal? A covenant is an agreement between two parties. So first I want to read for you psukim in Sefer Dvarim. It simply proves it beyond a shadow of a doubt. There's other psukim that allude to it, but these are crystal clear. And then I want to go back and try to understand. I want to reread them and try to understand what makes them all covenantal. That's the goal of today's share. Let me just check the chat real fast if I missed something. Okay. Someone got my jokes. Alrighty. Let's go back to share my screen. And we go to a Chumash. I want to open up Sefer Dvarim. And we're going to go to chapter 4 in Sefer Dvarim, which is Moshe Rabbeinu's introduction to his big speech. And just read 3 or 4 psukim. Just to know the background in chapter 4. Moshe is about to give his big speech to Israel. That they have to listen to all the laws that begin in chapter 5. He says, don't add, don't take off. Listen to them. These laws are important. Don't make you a light to other nations. And now he says as follows, Pasuk Tet. Now, as long as we're reading this, and these shiurim are in preparation for Shavuot, Ramban has a beautiful composition for Shavuot, his drasha for Shavuot. And in it, when he counts the mitzvot, he claims that there is a positive commandment to remember the events at Har Sinai. And he bases it on this verse. It's a big argument that we count this as a mitzvah. But Ramban, using these verses, begins here in verse 9, in Pasuk Tet. Raki shamer lecha u'shmor nafshcha ma'od. Be careful. Pen tishchach et debarim asher ro'eh necha. Make sure not to forget the things that you saw. And don't take them away from your heart. Right? All the days of your life, and teach and tell that experience to your children. What experience? Verse 10, Pasuk Yud. Yom Asher Amadata Lifnei Adonai Lecha B'Chorev. The day that you stood in front of God at Har Sinai in Chorev, which is the day of Matan Torah, B'Amor Hashem Elai Hakeli Et Ha'am, when God told me to gather the nation together, that's how we know that the commandment later in Devarim of Hakel is to remember Mamad Har Sinai, to remember this event, gather the nation, the Kahal, the congregation together, Vashmeim Et Dvarai, I'll make heard to them my words. And why are my words important? Asher Yimedun Liraoti, so that they'll learn to fear me. Kol Hayamim Asher Ahim Chayim Al Adama V'Bnehim Yilamidun. There's an idea of teaching fear, and that's why in our last week's share, there was so much an emphasis in chapter 19 on the need of fearing God, and how God says it's good that they fear me, and Moshe's arguing, you know, how fearful should it be? And Moshe says, don't be afraid, because it's good to be afraid. We'll go back to those psukim later on. But one of the key events to remember is not only the content of the Dibrot, but also the fear that they instill, or the awe. Now, Moshe is talking in the 40th year to the new generation. Some of them might have been young children at the time. Some of them weren't born yet. He tells them the story of what happened. That Tikrun Dabtun Tachat Ahar, everyone stood at the mountain, and the mountain was burning in fire, like we read in chapter 19, and up into the heavens, fire and smoke and cloud. Okay. Now, first Pasuk Yudbet, verse 12. By Daber Hashem Alechem Mitoch Ha'esh, here we see that God spoke to them. It seems like God spoke to them directly. Again, how far away they were and how much they understood, we can argue. Kol Dvarim Etem Shomim U'tmona Etchem Rim Zulat Tikol. You heard my voice, but you didn't see a picture. God had no form. You heard God's voice. You were instilled with fear, but there was no physical representation of God. Now here's the verse that we need. Verse 13, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayaged lechem et brito. At that time, God spoke to you and told you his covenant. That's the word brit. Remember, ushmartem et briti. The brit. Asher tziva etchem lasot. Aseret hadvarim. Therefore, what we call the Ten Commandments, which are actually the Ten Statements, are explicitly referred to as a brit between a covenant between God and his people. And these 10 statements are written on the Luchot Avanim. That proves that what's written on the Luchot Avanim, which we call the 10 Commandments, Chumash calls the 10 Statements, are a contract, they're a brit. Now, in addition to the brit, Votitzi v'Hashem Beitei l'lamed etchem chuk mishpatim, that'll be the speech in Devarim, in addition to the laws, In addition to the contract, there's also a guidebook that comes with it, which are going to be the laws in Sefer Devarim that have to be kept in the land that you're going to come and conquer. But primarily, I want to focus again on verse 13. That proves to me that the Ten Commandments are a covenant between God and his people. So in light of this, I have to go back and re-examine the Ten Commandments and try to understand what makes them covenantal. Even though they sound universal, what makes them covenantal? So let's go back now to Shemot. Actually, I can do the Hebrew. I can go back to a Chumash. No, I can do them in Devarim as long as I get Sefer Devarim open. Let's go to chapter 5. What's the first statement? Notice they're statements and not just commandments. Okay. What's the first statement or commandment? Onochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Tziticha, Zem Beitavrim, B'loi Lechachem Apanai. I'll stop here for a minute and explain something. In any contract, I'm not a lawyer, but I have friends who are lawyers, and here's what they told me. I'm not sure if they're lying to me, but here's what they said. Every contract begins with the two parties involved and the relationship between them. I'm pretty sure that's correct. If there's a lawyer who wants to either disagree, but my understanding is that whenever there's a contract, it's between two parties, and the contract always begins by defining the two parties and the relationship between them, and then all the details, the purpose of the contract, the sanctions, the rights, obligations, and things like that. If that's the case, how's the contract begin? What I like to say is, commandment number one is, I'm your boss, and that's why I took you out of Egypt. I'm basing that on our whole discussion in our last two classes, that the main thing that's happening is that we took upon ourselves an obligation to be God's people. If you agree to work for me, if you agreed as a nation to serve me forever, then in the contract, let's make it clear, you're working for me, and I'm the God who took you out of Egypt. Remember how the preamble was? You look what I did for you. You saw how I took you out of Egypt and how I brought you here, and now do you want to work for me? So God, going back to that opening statement in the proposition, I'm the God who took you out of Egypt in order to be your boss. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, we have that phrase. We'll go back to Parshat Kedoshim in a minute and say for Vayikra, Ani Hashem Elokechem. That was our first year. Remember Ani Hashem? Ani Hashem Elokechem. We saw it starting in Parshat Va'era before we left Egypt. That understanding that Hashem is your boss, not that he exists, but you're chosen to serve him, in my opinion, that's the key understanding of being Jewish. And we'll see later on, that's going to be the deeper meaning of the Shema. When we say Shema every day, it's not just a statement of faith, but it's a pledge of allegiance. It's the understanding you're chosen to serve God. Okay. Now, what's the other side? Okay. Number two says, no, he's our boss and we're working for him. Clause number two is, you can't work for anybody else. I call no moonlighting. It means it's not a part-time job. It's not you can serve more than one God. It's not something your entire existence as a nation is in my service. You're exclusive and you can't work for anybody else. And what's sort of implied in the second commandment is you're not allowed to quit. And if you don't like your job, pretty much that's tough. And you'll get great reward if you follow me, but there's very serious ramifications if you don't follow me. If you follow other gods, you're being in big trouble. And that, let me just go back to my source sheet again. Let's go to the one in Shemot, because you're more familiar with the ones in Shemot. We'll get in trouble otherwise. Let's go to Shemot, chapter 20. Here we go. I'm the God who took you out of Egypt. You can't have any other gods. Can't make any other symbols of other gods. You can't bow down to them, serve them. Why? Because ki anochi Hashem Elokecha. I'm Hashem, your boss. I'm a zealous God, and I'll punish you extremely harshly. Right? You, your kids, your grandchildren, for those who hate me. But I'll do kindness and give reward to the 1,000th degree for those who love me and follow my laws. We call this Midat Adin. This is very exacting attributes of God. Later, there's going to change to merciful ones later on in the second Luchot. But in the meantime, God is a demanding God with great reward and great punishment for following or disobeying. So if I look at the first two as the underlying theme of the contract, where you're working for me and I'm your boss, you can't work for anybody else, that reflects the proposition. And it also gives an explanation for those commentators like Ramban and Ibn Ezra who claim that the first two were given just like the last eight. There wasn't a change of plans in the middle, the way Rashi and Chazal understand, but rather they were all given at the same level. And the reason why the first two are in first person is because they're cardinal. The first two are different than the remaining eight because they're the very essence of our relationship that everyone has to hear. That's the main message God's giving you. I'm your boss, and scaring them, you can't work for anyone else, and ramifications, reward, and punishment. Now, again, if the first commandment is to believe that God exists, that would be universal. If the second commandment is not to believe in other gods, it would be universal. But this is, you're working for me and you can't work for anyone else. And the main point here in the second commandment, or the second statement, is the ramifications of how God's going to punish you harshly more than any other nation. If you don't follow him, he'll be more strict with you because you have a closer relationship. He's more demanding of you because it's about responsibility. Because you're not receiving this gift, but rather you're taking upon yourself an obligation. As we'll see later on, it's an obligation you can't get out of. So that's the first two. Now, what makes the third one something covenantal? Well, this goes back to a mega theme in Chumash about God's name. Let's read it first. Lo tisad shem Hashem Elokecha lashav. Don't take God's name in vain, or don't lift up God's name in vain. So if this is understood at the simple level, that you can't curse, or basically you can't say God's name in vain, meaning like don't, like if you miss, what I mentioned before, if you missed a foul shot, don't curse God because you missed it. Or don't just say his name, you know, loosely. It was treated with respect. That's a technical thing that for sure would be universal. But if you follow Chumash, especially Sefer Bereshit, there's a mega theme of Shem Hashem, which means God's reputation. If Shem doesn't mean his technical name, but his reputation, if you follow Sefer Bereshit, Am Yisrael was chosen to make a name for God. Just out of davening, Hodu Lashem Kiru Bishmo. We're commanded to call it in God's name, to sing his praises. Zam Shirulo, Zamrulo, as we say every day in Pesukei Zimra. But just let me share you, I'll stop the screen here for a minute. I'm assuming you're familiar with the Shir. I think we've done it before in one of our series. But if I go back to the theme of Shem Hashem Alter Tanach, I'll just give a quick review. It starts with a strange naming of after Cain and Hevel have their fiasco, basically, when Adam and Chava decide to have a third child, the third child is called Shet. And after Shet is born, Shet has a child, and his name is Enosh. And then where it says, Asu Chalik Rob Hashem Hashem, and the theme of calling out in God's name begins, did they begin to defame God's name? Was something good or bad, a big argument? But the idea of calling out in God's name begins already at the end of the story of creation. And then Noach, for some reason, calls his son Shem. And we explained that Shem, Noach wanted Shem to make a name for God. And hence he blesses God, the God of Shem, meaning when he talks about God, he's everyone's God. But Shem, his son Shem, was the one who would talk about God. That's why Chazal understands Shem as the first Rosh Yeshiva and Yeshiva Shem Be'ever. But the fall of mankind, of civilization after the flood, is the Tower of Babel, which in light of that, God picks Avram Avinu. And there the big sin, what made God upset was they're making a name for themselves. And it's Lanu Shem, for making a name for themselves, as opposed to for man, where man is at the center instead of God at the center. But the highlight is when Avram is chosen in Breshit, Avram, God tells Avram, begin Aliyah, I'll make you a great nation. But when Avram comes to Israel, the first thing he does, the highlight of his Aliyah, he comes to Beit El, and he builds an altar, and he calls out in God's name. That's in chapter 12, when his first Aliyah, he goes down to Egypt. When he comes back from Egypt, he returns to Beit El. And there again, he calls out in God's name. Not by chance, the place is called Beit El, because it'll be a house that's going to represent God. And again, he calls out in God's name. And then later on in his brief with Avimelech, the king of the Plishtim, he makes an agreement, and then he builds an Esho in Beersheba, and he calls it out in the name of God. Yitzhak does the same thing. Yaakov would like to, but he can't because of his life situation. But basically, when our forefathers are in a position of esteem where people look up to them, they call it in God's name. In light of that, as we see in Tehillim, there's a theme of making a name for God. The way we make a name for God, here, let's go back to Sefer Dvarim quickly. Right in the verses in Sefer Dvarim that we saw before, Sefer Dvarim towards the end. We had Dvarim here a minute ago. Here we go. Let's go back to Sefer Dvarim. No, we messed up here. I'll go to Breshit and get to Dvarim from here. In chapter 29, second. That was from Breshit. Let's go now to Dvarim. Should be chapter 29. In Parshat Nitzavim. You're standing in front of you. God's making another covenant in the end of Sefer Dvarim, at the end of the 40th year. Okay, to make you pass in this breed that God's making with you today. Why? L'man akim otcha lo la'am, in order to establish you as a people, and he'll be for you your God. Remember this phrase, hu yilecha l'alohim, as he told you and as he promised your forefathers. And this breed is not only with you, but also with those who are here today and those who are not here today. And you saw these things, and he goes about how you can't break the breed. That's one part of it. And then in chapter 28, if you follow my laws, what happened if you follow my laws in chapter 28? Remember, if you follow my laws in the Tochacha, I'll bless the land, you'll be blessed left and right. And then, Ikimcha Hashem lo la'am kadosh, kashir dishbalach, God will establish you as an am kadosh. This is exactly the brit Sinai. On what condition should you keep all God's commandments and follow his ways? Here we go. V'ra'u kol amei ha'aretz, ki shem Hashem nikra elecha. Again, chapter 28, verse 10. All the nations will see that God's name is associated with you, and they'll fear you. And that's the idea, that other nations, by our keeping God's mitzvah properly and talking about him and representing him, that will make God's game known. Why did I do all this? Real simple. I want to understand why the third commandment is covenantal. My claim is, it's not a technical thing, don't say God's name in vain. For sure, that's wrong. But at the thematic level, if the underlying reason that we're chosen, which we see in Bereshit and we see in Tehillim, and we see this theme developing and we see all through our Siddur, it's to make God's name known. If that's the underlying purpose of our covenant, then basically God's saying, don't do a lousy job. Don't mess up. Don't carry, you're carrying my name. Don't do it in vain. As we would say in simple Hebrew today, don't do a chilo Hashem. Don't desecrate my name. And we can bring lots of examples if you read the news. Because we're God's people and associate with God's people, when God's people act in a way that is disgusting in the eyes of others, is immoral, unjust, not caring, that's the greatest chilo Hashem possible. And therefore, in the contract, God reminds you, you're carrying my name, don't do it. Don't do it in vain. And thematically, that's going to be something really important when you apply Jewish law and have to decide how to prioritize things. That's always has to be a high priority. Now, so we took care of three. Now we got to get to Shabbat. How do we deal with Shabbat? Shabbat, I'm going to just give the framework for it because the shiur itself is way too long. But if you remember, I guess it was already a couple months ago, after we had all the laws of the Mishkan, the Mishkan is going to be a physical representation of God's presence, or not just that, but also a reminder of Har Sinai. If I go back to Sefer Shmot, let me go back to my screen, get to my Chumash again. If I go to Sefer Shmot, after all the laws of the Mishkan are finished, if we go to chapter 21, or 31, I'm sorry, Parshat Ki Tisa, we finish the laws of the Mishkan, we appoint Bezalel to be the builder, and then we're told as follows. These psukim are famous because we say them in Davening quite often, the end of it. Verse 12 again, chapter 31, verse 12. Vayomer Hashem Moshe Lemor. Follow the wording. After I commanded you to build the Mishkan, which is the physical reminder of the events of Har Sinai, and that God chose us to be his people, now I need a reminder in the realm of time. Therefore, speak to Bnei Yisrael lemar, ach et shabtotai tishmaru, even though I'm commanding you to build the Mishkan, it doesn't override Shabbat. Why? Ki oti, beni ubeinechem, it's a sign, a reminder, but a sign, an ot, between me and you, which is the wording of, it's covenantal wording, as we'll see, for all generations, let that for you to internalize, to know, ki ani Hashem mekadishchem, I'm the God who sanctified you, meaning that's exactly Brit Sinai, isn't it? Batem tiulim amlechet konim v'goy kadosh. I need a reminder in the realm of time, just like I have a reminder in the realm of space, the Mishkan, that God chose me to be his people and the events of our Sinai. I need a weekly reminder, which is Shabbat, to remember that God chose me to be his people. And hence, Shabbat is an Ot Brit. And therefore, because it's an Ot Brit, this will explain a very famous law. Ushmartem et HaShabbat, ki kodesh ilachem. It's separated for you, to remind you that you're Kadosh. Because it's a symbol of our covenant, if you desecrate the Sabbath day, in essence, you're saying, I don't identify with the symbol. It's like someone taking a wedding ring, which is a symbol of a commitment of marriage, and throwing it out. Therefore, it's capital punishment for you, Tumat. And anyone who does Melachan that day, he's cut off from the covenant. Why is there a punishment of Karet? Why is Karet the punishment, being cut off from the Brit, from the covenant? Why is that the punishment for Shabbat? If Shabbat is an Ot Brit, then by desecrating the Sabbath day, it makes sense. The consequence is you've cut yourself off from the covenant because you're taking the symbol of the covenant and throwing it out. Therefore, we conclude, we work 6 days a week. On the seventh day, we rest. Okay, and anyone who does Shabbat, again, capital punishment, that's why it's so severe. And then summarizing, v'shomer b'nei Yisrael to Shabbat, what we say in davening, to keep Shabbat, to remember the Brit Olam. It's an everlasting covenant, not just Shabbat. The Brit Olam is Brit Sinai, the eternal covenant between God and his people. The eternal symbol is Shabbat, But the eternal covenant is Brit Sinai. And remember this phrase, Benu ben ben Yisrael ti lo olam. Now, why is Shabbat this picked as a covenant? So that goes back to all these phrases, Ot, Benu, Beni, and thing. We have this theme. I'm just going to show you quickly the framework of it. To do it properly requires a whole hour, which we're going to run out of our hour in a minute. If I go back to Brit Milah here, to Brit Sinai, this idea of an Ot Brit began right after the flood, right when the flood was over, together with, right after the seven Noach laws. Elohim tells Noach, you know, this commandment of Pur Vu, etc. But then we have what's called the seven Noach laws. And after they're over, God tells Noach, I'm going to make a brit with you. Bakimoti briti itchem. And the brit is there won't be another flood. God won't bring another mass destruction like before. And the Ot Brit, okay, the reminder of the brit is going to be the rainbow, called Brit Keshet, the rainbow covenant. Vayalot brit benu ben haaretz, between not just God and Noach, between God and all his creation. So after the flood is over, we have a brit. We have the phrase Vakimoti et briti. We have a brit beni ubein and an oath brit with God's name Elohim. So remember, those are the key elements. Now, the way Chumash tells us the story of Brit Keshet, of the rainbow covenant, where God decides, I'm not going to bring another flood. I'm not going to bring destruction again. And therefore, God can't start over his creation. He's not going to destroy us all again. It's an eternal brit. And the rainbow is a symbol of that. In a similar manner, he's going to enter a covenant with Avraham Avinu, which we call Brit Milah. And we have all the same wording. God's name Elohim. In fact, the last time Elohim speaks to anyone in Bereshit is chapter 9. After chapter 9, after Brit Keshet, the next time Elohim speaks, Yud Kei Vav Kei, God's special name will speak. But God's name of God of creation, God's name Elohim, only speaks to man the next time is Brit Milah with Avraham Avinu. And God tells Avraham Avinu, to follow me, to be perfect in your ways. He'll make a brit. And the brit is between Elohim. God's name is Elohim in that brit. And the same phrase, Vakimot briti b'idu b'necha. God will establish a covenant between Avram and his offspring. Liot lachel Elohim. He'll be our God. We'll be his people. This is the buildup. This is playing the seeds for our Sinai. Okay? And circumcision will be an oath brit, a reminder, again, b'idu b'nechem. Again, without going to the details, the wording of Brit Milah is almost identical to the wording of Brit Keshet. The thematic connection is obvious. Once God decides not to bring destruction, what can happen? What can God do if mankind goes astray? When they go astray after the story of the Tower of Babel, God enters a covenant with the people to be a model nation so other nations who have to learn from to fix behavior. Once we're living in a world of fixing things, of tikkun, if God can't start over again, things have to be fixed. And to help facilitate fixing things, God's going to enter a covenant with his model nation. And then, therefore, the two main britot that we find before Har Sinai, in B'Shem Elohim, with God's name Elohim, the God who created nature, will be Brit Keshet and Brit Milah. And it's going to become, that's at the seed level. It's not official until we become a nation. We come out of Egypt and become a nation. And then once we become a nation, that's going to be Parshat Bahar coming up this week, Bar B'chukotai, V'freiti etchem, V'freiti etchem, the same reading, V'akimoti et briti etchem. And then I'll walk among you, I'll be your God, Batem Tudil Am, and you'll be my people. We have that phrase, we mentioned it many times. So we see that Brit Sinai is the final stage in that development from Brit Keshet to Brit Milah to Brit Sinai, and they all have an Ot Brit. In that sense, Shabbat is going to be the Ot Brit. That was this that we talked about before. Shabbat is an Ot Brit. Okay. Why do we do all that? Now I hope it's simple. I had to go out of my way to explain to you why Shabbat is particular, not universal. It's particular, even though there's nothing wrong if a non-Jew wants to remember God once a week. But Shabbat is an Ot Brit. Shabbat is a covenantal reminder. It's only for the Jewish people. It explains why it's in the Ten Commandments, because the Ten Commandments, again, is a contract. It's a brit between God and the people, based on that proposition we talked about. And therefore, the purpose is to carry God's name. Therefore, don't do it in vain, commandment number 3. Our weekly reminder of that covenant is Shabbat, and hence we have commandment number 4. So I hope we're making progress. I've gone through all the commandments so far to show, even though at first glance they seem to be universal, why they're particular. And they're all covenantal. Again, I'm your boss. You can't work for anybody else. And the ramifications, the harsh ramifications, the purpose of the covenant, carrying God's name in vain, and figuring his name properly, not to do it in vain, and our weekly reminder of Brit Sinai being Shabbat. And hence, to remember the story of the flood and what God expects from men and your job of why you're chosen to be his model nation. Now we get to honoring parents. Again, honoring parents for sure should be universal. What I want to claim is that in Brit Sinai, one of the key advantages of God making a covenant between a people, not just being represented by an individual, as most gods are, you know, you have individual people representing a god. When God's represented by a nation, it's not just a quantitative difference, though there's a lot more people doing it. But when a nation represents God, that can be eternal. That's called Netzach, Nitzchiut. Humans come and go, Ad Mea Vesrim, but a nation can be eternal. And if Am Yisrael, this is going to be a real key point, if Am Yisrael takes upon itself as a nation to represent God, then we're making a commitment. That first generation that made that commitment was not only making a commitment for their own generation, they were making a commitment for all generations. We're going to see this over and over again in Chumash. And that's the whole theme of Sayu at Sinai, that everyone was at Sinai. Now, listen to the logic. If every Jew is committed to be God's people and we're part of this nation, then we're also obligated not only to represent God, we're obligated to keep that covenant going. We have an eternal obligation, but we're not eternal. How do you fulfill that eternal obligation? Hence the obligation to have children. That's my understanding. That's why Pur Vu, because I understand it as an obligation for the Jewish people and not for all humankind, it's a blessing. Remember, Pur Vu is a blessing in the story of creation. For the Jewish people, it's an obligation because we have to remain a Jewish people. And therefore, instinctively, the ability to have children is a blessing from God. We have to thank God for that blessing. That's a universal concept. Everyone should thank God for the blessing, the ability to have children. But the responsibility and the obligation to have children, and not just to have children, but to teach them Torah and to keep the tradition going, that's going to be an obligation. Therefore, as God's people, as an obligation of the contract, I don't only have to have children, I have to teach my children tradition. And therefore, we have to learn to respect our parents. Maybe I'm stretching things, but what I want to claim is the commandment to honor your parents is not just a commandment for children. It's a commandment on parents to teach children the need to honor tradition. And therefore, I can expand that just not just parents and children, but adults and children or teachers, educators, and their students. It's the need to pass on that tradition, that it's not only our obligation to serve God as an individual, but to keep that responsibility going and pass that tradition from one generation to the next. That's how I understand Kibbud Av, and that's why it's in the contract. Because honoring parents is essential in order for the contract to continue. And when we see how this idea is expanded upon in the other sections of Chumash, I'll try to prove it when we, in Sefer Dvarim, where we see that this concept of honoring parents applies itself to the laws for the Supreme Court, laws for judges, laws for political leaders, laws for Kohanim and Levim, all the different leaders, all the different types of parental positions at the national level. We'll deal with that when we get to the application in Sefer Dvarim. So we got five down and five to go. Now, the second half, I'm stuck. I agree that not to murder, adultery, stealing, and swearing falsely, I agree that those are universal. God expects that from everybody. But in my opinion, that those are not the key points of the Ten Commandments. Those are a lead up to number 10. It was not to kill, steal, adultery, and stuff. That's universal. Commandment number 10, I think, is the main commandment upon the Jewish people in the contract, which I'd like to refer to as don't even think about it. Meaning, God doesn't want anyone to kill, steal, adultery, and swear falsely. But if you've watched any movie, I'm sure you're familiar with them, right? Find me a movie that doesn't have murder, adultery, stealing and lying, right? It's part of human, unfortunately, it's part of human nature. What's my proof? We find it in every movie. And people do it for good reasons. There's always good reasons to do things that are wrong. Now, of course, everyone agrees those are bad. But because we're God's people and representing God, for sure we can't do that because we're God's model nation. But to make sure that we don't do it, we're commanded a step higher. We don't even think about it. It's called preventive medicine, or what they call in Pirkei Avot, Asus Yad V'Torah. What I want to claim is, and if we look at the Tamei Mikra, let's go back to the Ten Commandments in Chumash. Let's go back to chapter 12, which should be the last source. Chapter 20, that's it. If I look at the Ten Commandments and their Tamei Mikra, notice that the last five is really one pasuk or two pasukim. Notice, lo tirzach, lo tinach, lo tignov, lo tmerach. The four that lead up to the fifth is one verse. That's it. There's no etnachta. It's all, it depends how you read them. There's different ways of the cantillation marks. There's an argument between them. But the way our tradition is, they're one verse, in my opinion, that lead up to lo tachmod. Meaning, for sure, don't do that. But our main commandment is don't even think about it. And that explains how to define lo tachmod. Because if it's actually taking something, then it's stealing. If it's thinking about it, how can God punish you for your thoughts? You have to be able to do something. But I think it's a concept of preventive medicine. If something is important to you, if these values are core, and of course, God doesn't want anyone to do that, but it's God's nation representing him, we for sure can't do these, but to make sure we don't do those, God holds us to a higher standard. We can't even think about it, because in all the movies, it never begins with a murder. It always begins with our adultery. It always begins with wanting something that's not yours, that shouldn't be yours. It begins with coveting. And therefore, as preventive medicine, God says, don't even think about it. God can't expect that from all civilization, but because we're a special nation, God holds us to a higher standard, and therefore, don't even think about it. I think in my understanding, that's the key to the covenant. And this concept will be expounded upon and expanded by the rabbis. Every Rabbanan is the same idea. And tons of laws are going to take this idea and take it to the nth degree. So I was just give you one quick example from last week's Parsha, and we'll finish with that. When we do Parsha Mishpatim, I'll show you how they fit the Ten Commandments, but I just want to do something that's fresh in your memory from yesterday, from Sefer Vayikra, chapter 19. I'm sure you noticed this. If not, you should be ashamed. But in chapter 19, in Kedoshim to you, it's obviously related to the Ten Commandments. God tells Moshe, tell Adat Bnei Yisrael and tell them, Kedoshim to you, Ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokechem. Isn't that reflecting the proposition v'atem tuli mamlechet honim v'kol kadosh? Am Yisrael, as God's people, kedusha is not what we are, it's what we need to be. God is kadosh. God's separate from his creation. He's unique. We are not kadosh. We have to be kadosh. Our being chosen has to manifest itself in the way we behave. We're not chosen because we're better. We're chosen to be better. And therefore, we have to act according to this obligation. And therefore, Kedoshim too is what we need to be, not what we are. Remember at the end, V'item li Kedoshim ki Kedosh ani. That's what we must be. Then we have examples. Didn't you notice that these are the Ten Commandments repeated or reframed? Ish v'aviv mitiro, that's Kibbutz, that's Commandment 5, Shabtot Tishro, Commandment 4. Don't follow other gods. Commandment number 2, Ani Hashem Elokechem, Commandment number 1. You can't miss it. It's alluding to the Ten Commandments and this phrase, Ani Hashem Elokechem, which will be the refrain. Why we have the laws of Pigel here? Another shir, but this is talking about good behavior. But what you're going to find, you'll find Lo Tignov. You'll find about 7 of the Ten Commandments, which are almost word for word identical, but some of them are only alluded to. I simply want to pick up the one that, you know, it says Lo Tignovu, it doesn't say, instead of Lo Tinaf, it has the din of Shichva Charufa, which explains why it's there later on. This strange law later on when you take someone who's not really married yet but should be someone else's wife without going to the details. But if I'm looking for Lo Tirzach, even though it says Lo Tignov, and it says Kibud HaRim and Shabbat, it never says Lo Tirzach. But there's a verse that relates to it. I'll give you an example. In addition to Lo Tignovu, okay, it says Lo Tashir, Lo Tishivu Bishmi LaShaker. Okay? That'll cause a chilul Hashem. That's both commandment number 3 again, and also commandment number 9. Lo tashoket recha v'lo tigzol is an application of not stealing. You know, it's paying your workers on time or ripping them off in business. Not to pay your worker on the day he finishes his job. It's called halanat schar. You owe someone money, you pay them the next day, the same day. You can't say, I'll pay you later. That's an Isur Deoraita, but it's expanding the idea of stealing. Okay. Now, what's going to expand the idea of killing? Look at Pasuk Tetzayim. Lo telech rachil ba'amecha v'lo tamod adam re'acha. Ani Hashem. Lo tamod adam re'acha, that's an expansion of lo tirzach. It's not just you can't murder someone, you can't be an innocent bystander. If you can do something to save someone's life, you're obligated. And if you don't do that, Kedoshim Kiyul treats as though you've committed murder. That's taking lo tirzach and expanding it. That's the idea of taking a concept and applying it in your day-to-day life. We see it much more in detail in Parshat Mishpatim. But the beauty, if this is lo tirzach, so is this. And it's lo telech rachil ba'amecha. You can kill someone with words. There's too many examples of that for sure. We call that lashon hara and rechilut. By saying something, you can kill someone without doing any physical damage. You can kill someone with slander. And taking these ideas in Kedoshim to you, and that's what I want to show you when Chumash presents these laws, this whole unit about how to behave, it's clearly applying, it's an application of the Ten Commandments. Why it's in the middle of Vayikra, we'll talk about it another time. But again, what I want to conclude with is that this law, these last five commandments, which we see detailed and expanded upon in Kedoshim 2, which is clearly an application of not just the Ten Commandments, but the proposition, the proposal to be God's people, to be a mamlecha konim v'lo kadosh, that's what we need to be. We take this idea and we take it to a higher degree because we're chosen to represent God, and that's how we make God's name great. And if we go like to the end of it, it's not just b'avtal recha kamocha, should there be a stranger in your land, don't mistreat him. Treat a stranger like an ezrach, like a citizen, b'avtal lo kamocha. Even a stranger you have to treat like yourself because you were strangers in Egypt. And then not to do injustice in all realms of life, in court, in measurements. You have to have exact measurements, mosnei tzedek. And that's why I took you out of Egypt. Again, ani Hashem Elokechem, that's the first line of the Ten Commandments. And therefore keep all my laws. You can't miss that idea that Kedoshim 2 expands this idea of the Ten Commandments, this brit, into day-to-day life. If you look in chapter 20, which is like it's a great ender, this is two beautiful psukim in chapter 20. Vitem kdosh, tiatzishtem vitem kdoshim, ki ani Hashem Elokechem. Same idea. And at the very end, we have vitem li kdoshim, ki kadosh ani Hashem, v'avdiotchem min amim lo li. That's a summary of this whole idea. You have to be kedushas of what you are, is what you need to be, because I'm kadosh, and I'm the God you're representing, and I separated you from all the nations in order to serve me. This idea of obligation, not you're chosen, you want something, not just, oh, you got a gift and you're better than everyone, but rather you have this obligation, and what this obligation implies and how it affects how you have to behave, I think Sefer Vayikra in the middle of it, Kedoshim 2 in the center of the book, is going to highlight that point. Let me go back to my first source sheet now. Yeah, we have to finish up. It's finish up my hour real quick. 1 second. Where are we? Share screen and source sheet. Here we go. So we had the here, our class today. So we took the Ten Commandments as statements, as things. And then we had the themes of Shem Hashem and Ot Brit. We explained those commandments 3 and 4. And then we had our separate source sheets. So but if I go back to my title for today, what was our title? Commandments or statements. The Dibrot, again, it's not just 10, it's not the first 10 commandments to come up or the first 10 most important, but rather there's something in these Aseret HaDvarim, in these 10 statements that are covenantal. And the result, once we take upon ourselves this obligation to be a Mamlechet Konim Kadosh and to follow God's laws, if you're willing to obey me, right, and keep my covenant, and that will make you my treasure nations, even though I'm the God of all the nations, that will make you this priestly nation as a people, and that's a nation separated to serve God. Because we accepted this, that leads us right to the Ten Commandments. or the 10 statements, and they're a contract. Okay, their purpose might be universal, but their actual obligation, it's a contract obligation between God and the people. And hence, that's why they're for us. So if I go back to my first question, even though the purpose is universal, the actual obligation is only for Am Yisrael. And that explains why Shabbat is special, why carrying God's name is special, and it all helps us understand what's this love of the Tachmod. Let me check the chat real fast, because I only have a couple minutes left. Stop the share, chat, we'll go backward. Where's Lo Tachmod and Kedoshim? Ah, okay, that's a good question. That's a whole share, but just read it. Almost all these things we did is Lo Tachmod. Of doing in your field. Remember when I see Lo Tachmod like all through it. When you're harvesting your field to leave over for the poor, don't hoard everything for yourself.
Rabbi,
again, there's better examples later on.
If I can interrupt, I'll wait.
Yeah, sure, go ahead, Rabbi.
No, I was just going to say the Medrash. I was actually reading it yesterday in the little Chumash had, right, or Minyan. The Medrash says, Lo Tachmod v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. I thought that was such a powerful Midrash. When it quotes all the psukim, it quotes for Lo Tirtzach, Lo Tamod, Lo Tamreicha, as you said. But for Lo Tachmod, the Medrash quotes the pasuk of v'ahavta l'reicha, which is...
Very good. Okay, excellent.
It's a fascinating...
All the Parshanim go searching for the Ten Commandments.
Right, so
Seven, and what are the extra three?
Right.
And the ones that are hard to find, you have to expand, but that's perfect.
Yeah, that was a beautiful medrash, and I just figured I'd had a point.
You saved me. That's the best answer.
Oh, it's okay. Okay.
Perfect.
Go ahead. Okay,
thank you so much, everyone.
No, I think, are there any more questions that we finished here? No, hold on. I'm just looking now.
Are you dreaming of doing them?
Oh, yeah. No, I think you did get most of them. Yeah, the one that's okay. Got everything, I think. Okay.
Whether Tisa doesn't mean, the idea is, like signing a contract. That's good. But the idea is, it's just like a wedding has a wedding ring or a wedding band is a symbol of a contract. Shabbat is that symbol. The old breed is your reminder. Now, and just like when you follow Kedusha, just like Shabbat is separated from the other days of the week in special, but for the sake of the rest of the days of the week, so to Am Yisrael special for the sake of the 70 nations. So that's the parallel is going to be important to understand what the meaning of Kedusha is and the idea of separation.
Did you address Eric Levy's question about if Lo Tisa is a possibility of prophesizing? I'm not sure why one would say that, but...
I'm not sure. I have to think about that.
But, okay, if you want to follow Masa.
The word Masa, it's true that prophets shouldn't make things up. You know, there's a Nevuot Sheker, but that's the whole theme in Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel that might relate to that.
I just meant because Masa Moav and Mossad
source. So that's in that. Masa there means something, that's a different thing. Masa, that's something heavy. But you're right. It's the same source because not to carry something, but in general, that's a heavy. The masot that Yishayahu talks about are predictions about God punishing other enemies. There's a masa is a heavy message about destruction coming on a nation, where the people love to hear because usually it's prophecies about the doom of other people, and then later the Levim turn on that masa is going to be about you.
About Bilam's nevuot. In each of Bilam's.
Here, I mean, think it's to carry. It's to carry God's name. I think it's in a different context.
Okay. Rabbi.
So I'm going to stop here and we'll continue in Mirza Shem next week.
Okay. Thank you very much. Now, we already got the title for next week, you know. So, yeah.
Next week is that. Next week is from.
Great title. Yeah. Okay. When we send Nasev and Ishma. Of course, our next year is tomorrow, where Rabbi Arvi Schwat is going to talk about 8 approaches to this. The specialness of the land of Israel, continuing his series on religious Zionism, then Mark Shapiro in the evening, 8:30, on continuing his series on his correspondence with rabbinic figures, and then Tuesday, Ora Wiskin on Chassidut, followed by Ilana Goldstein-Sachs on Sefer Rut. Wednesday, we have a triple header, that is Marty Lakshin on Pshat, Rosh, and Halakha, followed immediately at 12:15 by Lori Novak and Woman in Kriyat HaTorah, and then 8 in the evening on Haftorah of the Week, Dr. Sokolow, his continuing series, Thursday Shuli Mishkan on Israel, or, you know, her pictures and the modern state of Israel, always her fascinating, you know, series. Thursday evening, Parsha Shir, 8:30, Rebecca Winter from Atlanta, Georgia, will be giving the shir. If you haven't heard her, it's well worthwhile. She gave one of our talks in the 24 and 8 last summer. And then Friday morning, my shir on Pirkei Avot. And okay, we look forward to seeing you all. As I always say, invite a friend. Eric, nice to see you. That's
thank you.
That's nice. Glad you can join us. Thank you. And I want to say everybody should be well and be healthy. And like I always say, invite a friend, invite one friend to come, and look forward to hearing from you. And okay, have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow. Please God, those who can make it 11 a.m. in the morning. Have a great day. Joe Mandelmov, you're still here. The source sheets will be recorded. Always, Rabbi Liebtag never likes to have the sources only posted after the shir. So there are some speakers who like that, and of course that's fine. So they should go up soon. I don't even have them yet, actually. But and the recordings are should be on the program page. I understand. I've been told by some people that on some people, I don't know why, we have a new website. You might have noticed for some people when they log in, the recordings are not on the program page. And you can then you can type in, go to the search button on Tim Torah, I think is the best way. But it should be, if you go to the program page, we have on the bottom of every program, right there on the page, both the video and the audio that you can watch. You don't even have to go to the YouTube channel anymore. It's directly on the website.
When you post the sources, you post it on your program, under the program?
Yeah, everything's on program page. The sources, the audio, and the video. And okay, it should be there. I think you have to log on. I mean, but you have to log on once, and you have your password. That's your permanent login. But my understanding is, because a few people have emailed us, that it isn't working for them. So we're working on it. After 10 years, we launched our new website, there are always, you know, tweaks. We apologize for that. We're working on it to fix it. So for some people, it may not work. If that's the case with you and you can't find it, just email us and we'll send you a direct link.
I have to register to get a password then.
You have to log in once. You have to set up like a login. I mean, it's free. You have to log in once, so the computer will automatically recognize you. I this is like above my you know pay grade, this kind of stuff. But you know, that's how it's supposed to work. So you know, if you're having a problem, please know. No, the videos are on the site. I'm saying some people may have it. It's not maybe, you know, yesterday's video. Well, whatever. But the videos are on the site now. The most recent. Yeah. Okay. Let us know. We always like to hear if there are ways to improve. But if they're having any problems, please let us know. And we'll try to solve it as quickly as we can.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Okay. Bye-bye.